You're listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Shelley Ryan, host and producer of The Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television. I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today, and we'll be talking till about 12:30 with our guest by phone, Annie Spiegelman, who is a California master gardener, and she's the author of Talking Dirt, the Dirt Diva's Down-to-Earth Guide to Organic Gardening. Welcome, Annie.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi. This should be a fun conversation. We've got less than half an hour, but organic gardening is such a hot topic. Let me just give out the phone number real quick so that we can take questions from folks. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And people can also People can email by going to talk@wpr.org. You can tell I'm more focused on television than radio, so my brain is going through this switch here. So, Annie, one of my first questions is: organic gardening easier in California than Wisconsin?
Well, I have to say I'm a little spoiled here in this beautiful Mediterranean climate in Northern California. So. It's probably easier here. However, I am originally from New York City. I'm a Manhattanite. Grew up in an apartment building. And if I can grow organically and learn how to love the soil, that means anybody can.
That's true. Then you've been through all of the, that would be about zone five, I think.
Zone five, exactly. Yeah. But
just to make us all weep, though, what zone are you in now?
Well, per the USDA, I'm in zone 9, but that's also Southern California. So it's somewhere, I'd say around 8, somewhere between 8 and 9. And, I mean, it's gorgeous and sunny out here, and we have the magnolia trees are starting to bloom, so we know that spring is on the way. And, you know, I'm hearing about the weather in poor North Dakota and the flooding. But you know what? When I hear these horror stories about weather, you know, it tells me once again that organic farming and gardening is the way to go. Right now, organic farming is only 1% of the U.S. farming. And it is the answer, especially if we're going to have climate change, or we're going to have floods, and we're going to have drought, because in organic farming, we're feeding the soil. We know that the soil is alive. We're always adding compost to it, organic. Sorry about that.
Okay. Well, as you're saying, we need to reduce our carbon footprint, period, because...
Exactly. And we also need to reduce the amount of chemicals that we're putting in, especially when we're getting all these floods, and we've been feeding the crops with chemical fertilizers and pesticides. It's going everywhere. I mean, it's going into our water. It's going into our pregnant women now. We're finding pesticides in the umbilical cord. So it's really getting scary. And, you know, we like to blame the industry, and we love to blame the farmers, but homeowners are using tons of pesticides because we've all been, you know, we've been hoodwinked. We've been told, well, if you're going to garden, you need this. You need to go to the garden center and buy a plastic container of chemicals. And you don't need that, but we've been so brainwashed to think we do. So it's really changing our whole perspective on how we garden.
Well, and it's not just the pesticides in Wisconsin. In fact, for fertilizing, we have a phosphorus ban because of this excessive phosphorus.
Do.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know about that.
Because it's already...
It's too much.
Right, it's already excessive. So
exactly.
If you don't mind, Annie, we've got people on the line waiting to throw some questions at you, so we're going to leap into these. Our first caller is Chuck from Middleton, and he has questions about black locust.
Black locust.
Chuck, okay, go ahead. Let's see if we can. We'll both deal with this, Annie. Go ahead, Chuck.
Good afternoon, ladies.
Hi.
I'm kind of a entrepreneur with the species called the black locust, and it's a invasive. DNR thinks of it as an invasive species to Wisconsin, but one of its properties is it's extremely rot resistant. And, for example, for raised bed boards for the surround, it works excellent. There are no, you know, added chemicals. It's naturally rot resistant. And, for example, posts or hops poles. And I'm actually looking to harvest more to augment my inventory for sale anywhere within 30 miles of Madison. I will help people eradicate it.
Wow. Huh.
That I'm not sure we can help with that question, but you might check with the DNR because, you know, they are treating it as an invasive. I think it was originally brought here, in fact, as kind of fence rows because of the rot resistant. But, you know, they'd probably be delighted if you want to harvest it and get rid of it.
Right.
I
don't know. I'll have to look that up here, too. I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah. So, Chuck, I think that's a bust as far as we can, you know, help you with that. And I think we'll go on to the next call.
Was Chuck thinking of making them into raised beds?
That
what he's thinking?
Right. And he's offering
that idea of thinking, any kind of untreated lumber that would work and not rot. I love the idea. And I like the forward thinking.
Right. Well, and that's why I think checking with the DNR, there's probably people that would weep in happiness to have him
exactly. Take
out their black locust for them.
No, that's such great. And that's what we want to do, you know, use everything that we have instead of making new. So, reusing and reusing, recycling.
Right. Be creative. You know, don't use something that doesn't involve chemical use.
Exactly.
I'm talking with Annie Spiegelman, the author of Talking Dirt, The Dirt Diva's Down-to-Earth Guide to Organic Gardening. There, I said it right the whole way through.
It's hard.
It's a tongue twister. Annie, our next guest or our next phone call is Steve from Baraboo, and he has a question about tomato blight. Any thoughts? Go ahead, Steve.
Okay, so we all know that last year was a really, really, really bad year, and all but the greatest of us managed to lose all of our tomatoes to this horrible black goo.
Yes, we did.
That we were supposed to have pulled it all away and incinerated it or something, but I know for a fact, given the number of tomatoes that I had and the fact that they were very productive until they died. So
right.
I couldn't possibly have gotten anything close to all of it off my garden. And I have I had a lot of mulch down.
Right.
And I'm wondering, short of some hopelessly toxic thing, and short of planting the tomatoes somewhere else 3 years for the next couple of years, what can you do? Is there anything that can be added to the soil that will gobble up all this nasty stuff so that we hopefully don't repeat last year?
Right. Now, what is your name?
Steve.
So, Steve, even in perfect California climate of agriculture here, I get fusarium wilt, which is a fungus here with my tomatoes, and verticillium wilt. So crop rotation is hard for us homeowners. You know, we don't have all the space, and none of us have enough patience to wait 3 years. So I try to switch, though, every year if I can, at least to change to another raised bed. I don't know if that's an option for you. And I'm just thinking, if you have it in the soil, I mean, you don't want to take out. Is it a raised bed or just an area?
No, this is just a big garden.
Big area. Okay. You know, I don't know the answer to that. My first thought would be to go to another area with it, if you could, if there was, if you had 6 to 8 hours of sunlight in another area. But what are you thinking, Shelley, adding enough compost in there? I don't know, but that may make it even worse.
Well, really two things because of the blight. You need to go to another area for sure.
Yeah, my first thought, too.
Yeah, you have to just because, we got inundated last year, Annie. I mean, I hate to say this. I was one of the few people who didn't have it, but I don't know. I have no idea why.
It's so depressing because your tomatoes form, and then you get all excited, like you're doing pretty good.
Get back to the goo. But the other thing, it would be wherever you put them, to make sure that you put down a mulch, because one of the ways a lot of and I'm not sure if it's this particular blight, but anytime that there's rain and the raindrops hit the soil, it causes the soil to splash back up onto the tomato leaves.
The leaves, yep.
So anything you can do to prevent the soil from splashing back up onto your tomato leaves. Also, I hope you burnt or put into garbage bag any refuse from last year. So those are the best things you can do. And even if you don't have room, you just can't use that. You don't grow tomatoes this year. You cannot plant in the same spot.
Yes, Steve, can you even wait? If you don't have room, can you wait a year? I know 3 years is really hard.
Yeah.
I always have a lot of mulch. But how about black plastic on top of the mulch so that which might splash is completely covered up by the black plastic.
That's definitely an idea, but if there's right. anything alive in that soil, it's going to get to the roots.
And you know, it's really, tomatoes are just so prone to these blights that with maybe some other vegetable, I'd say try it, but I've had such hardships with tomatoes, even in California. Blights, we've had other issues, but they're just, it's also contagious.
What you can do in a pinch for a year or two is plant them in whiskey barrels, and you can actually get a fairly decent crop. I've done it that way.
Yep. Steve, is would you want to try one of the hanging baskets? Because I like those, actually, and they've worked pretty well. So that's another possibility away from that area, as long as you have full sun.
So do I understand it that basically the blights will essentially run their course?
Diseases live in the soil. I mean, some things like Annie.
A lot of them do.
Right. The fusarium, I think, stays in the soil for, what is it?
It's a couple of years, and yeah. Verticillium wilt is air. The fungus is airborne too, so it's really a tough one. We give it a few years, but we also rotate as much as we can. Thank God. Luckily, I have sun in a couple of areas, and I just try and switch it off.
You know, we've got other callers waiting. Steve, let me give you the best advice for our local issues, so that we're not sending you down the wrong path entirely. If you go to my website, which is wpt.org/garden. I have a direct link to UW Extension, the horticulture folks.
Great.
And go link there, Steve. And they have been dealing with the blight issue since last summer. And, you know, check out what they've got on their site, because there may be some other ideas that we haven't even thought of. Because at this point, I hate to lead you. There may be something simpler that we don't know about.
Right, because we sound so pessimistic.
Exactly. Yeah, they may have something that might make you a little happier. I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Let's go to our next call from Tracy in Madison. This is an interesting question. Go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, hi. We moved into a new house a few years ago with a raspberry patch, and it has nettle growing all over, and I've pulled it for a few years, but it's really, I don't know if there's any better way to contain it that would it involve.
Stinging nettle you're talking about?
What is it called?
Stinging nettle? That
nettle,
nasty?
The plant, like it
yes.
stings when
right.
you...
Yes.
Yes. It's awful.
Okay, Annie.
Now, nettle is one of the... I know we all look at it as a weed, but it actually adds some nutrients to the soil, so it's not horrible. But with nettle, and they're hard to pull out, and they're... pointy. Is that the pointy ones that hurt?
And they burn you when you touch them.
Yeah. You know, because I've stopped using any kind of chemicals in my yard for the last 10 years, that I do so much of the hand weeding by hand. Is it how big is that area?
It's pretty big. I mean, it's probably like four rows that are a good 10 or 12 feet long.
Okay, and it's constantly there, or is it coming up right now in the spring?
I don't see it yet, but it does come up early. It's tricky because it looks so similar to the raspberry.
Exactly, yeah.
Shelly
may have other advice, but I've used a tool called the claw, which is one of the newer hand gardening tools out there, which is a sharp claw, and it's been really helpful with some of the perennial weeds out there that are deeper. So that would be my advice. But what do you think, Shelly?
Otherwise you're going to just have to try to maybe identify them separately and mulch again. You know, a lot of people put down newspaper and then leaves or something or grass clippings over them, and that will, you know, smother them. But a sideline that I happen to know because I know strange things is nettles are also highly edible and very, very good for you. Eating the young leaves, you can eat them as a cooked green before they get the little burn pockets on the edges of whatever you call them on the edges of them. They're actually quite good for you. I don't know if that cheers you up at all, but you might want to just look into them more. They're very high in vitamin C, I believe, as well. A number of herbalists can tell you more about that, but they're very good for you.
We all have this thing. We're so anti-weeds, and some weeds aren't so bad. And you know, of course, there are many that are. But everybody, I feel like everybody's got to take a deep breath and everybody wants to run and combat and, you know, fight the weeds all the time. And I think if we could research them, take them to a master gardening office first and make sure what they are and learn a little bit about them, and then we won't have to be so angry at them all the time.
Well, for Annie, for instance, in your book, you talk about purslane, and it's another highly edible, fantastic in salads. And in fact, there's a cultivated variety called Goldberger or something like that, which I grow for my salads.
So many. And you know, we've all, and there's some clovers that are actually good for the soil that add nitrogen, and we all freak out when we see clovers on our lawns, you know.
Right. Well,
we should be getting rid of those lawns anyway.
Right, exactly. Well, and especially since my lawnmower is broken. But we'll take another call. In fact, this ties right in with what we're talking about. Boy, this is perfect. Mark from Richland Center. Go ahead, Mark.
Well, yeah, I want to second the idea of eating the nettles, because I eat them all the time. And you do have to watch out that they don't sting you, but
yes,
you could put a glove on to pick them.
Well, and that's a good way to control them as a weed, too, yeah.
Yeah, you can pull them if you want to pull them. Put a glove on and pull them. But don't pull them all, because all year round, if you pull the top four leaves off, it'll send out two more shoots, and then you pull those off. And it's just, and I cook them with bacon. As soon as they've steamed a little bit, you can like cook your bacon, and at the very last minute, throw the nettles in on top of the bacon, and then throw a cover over that, and give it about 4.5 minutes, and you've got a really, really good meal.
I've had them in quiche. I've had them in salad. Yeah, see, we're digressing, Annie, but I think it's.
I gotta try this.
They're excellent. I highly recommend them. Next caller, Mary in Whitewater. Go ahead, Mary.
I have a comment and sort of a question about disease control on tomatoes.
Yes.
I've been an organic gardener for at least 4 years, and I've been using a product that is OMRI listed called Serenade Garden Disease Control Concentrate.
Right, I know that.
Well, it's really difficult to find, and I have to order mine from a gardening supply house to get it. And I've taken it to my local garden centers and asked them to start carrying it, and they don't, because they say their distributors can't get it. But I use it starting very early in the tomato season and other vegetables, but mainly for tomatoes.
Right.
And it needs to be used consistently. And then if I run out of it or stop using it, then I do have disease problems. But it does control bacterial spot and powdery mildew and rust and gray mold and leaf blight and scab and a lot more things. But you just need to be consistent with spraying it.
And I like the Serenade products. I've used them before, too, and I'm surprised they're so difficult to find. Are there local nurseries that can, because I don't see it that often, you know, at the big garden centers, but a local nursery that could order it?
I don't understand. I've tried to get them to order it, and they won't order it, so I end up ordering it myself. And then it's more expensive because you have the shipping.
Right.
And
exactly.
I don't understand why people on this gardening program, I've been listening to it for a long time. Nobody recommends it, even the organic people. They don't recommend it. And I know that when we see all those big, beautiful vegetables, organic vegetables in the grocery stores that look gorgeous, I know those mass-produced organic vegetables that those farmers are using this. Otherwise, they wouldn't get such a large
production. No, it's true. And actually, a lot of organic farmers do use Serenade. I would almost, if you had the time, even contact the company. I mean, I'm sure they'd want their product sold, and I think it's a good product. I've recommended, and especially for tomatoes. I've recommended it for, and it's safe enough, you know, for edibles, which I like about it.
I did contact the company.
Yeah.
And they just told me to go to all my garden centers individually and ask them to start carrying it, and they gave me an area map of all the different distributors where I could get it in my area for about a 50-mile radius, and that's all they did.
Oh, God, I'm surprised. Do your nurseries carry other alternative, safer products there?
No.
Oh, God, am I going to have to go
there? There's just nothing at all as an alternative except Serenade. That's it.
That just drives me crazy. And you know what? As hard as it is, I think everybody has to start asking for these things in our nurseries. We don't want, you know, when I go to my big stores, which I'm not going to mention the names, the big chain stores, it's all chemicals in the front at the cash register. It's like the candy that at the supermarket they want your kids to buy. And it really has to be with us talking to managers and demanding and asking for options, for alternatives. We know they're out there.
Well, now that we've all talked about this statewide, perhaps this will help us, too. It's called Serenade.
Yes.
And it's, Annie, you're saying you've used it with success?
It's a great product, and it's wonderful that if it can work so well on many different edible plants, and you know, it's safe enough for edibles, so I like the product. And I think I even mentioned it in the book somewhere.
Okay. Well, you heard it here, folks. Start asking, and maybe this can help. The more people ask, the more it's going to help people carry stuff.
Can I make another comment?
Yeah, we've got a few minutes left, so
okay.
Real quick, please.
www.serenadegarden.com yes. is where people can go and ask the company to start making it available.
Good.
We don't tell the company we can't find your product. They're not going to do a whole lot to help us.
Okay. Then let's
exactly.
keep that in mind. And just a real quick question for you, Annie, and then we're going to have to wrap up. We have an email from Gabrielle in Delafield. She used to live in California and loved the sweetly scented pink or naked lady lilies and wonders
yes.
if can they be grown in Wisconsin if lifted. And what variety are they? And just real quick with that, please.
Naked ladies, you know, what, you're zone 5 up there?
4A, 4B.
You know, I don't know if they would live there because they really like heat and they're pretty drought tolerant. And it might be too wet there in the summers there. I mean, it'd be worth a try. I don't know. I would say to contact one of the local nurseries to ask them or local master gardeners to check with them.
Well, and also,
but my first thought is not.
Not. Me too. And I also would ask that common name, there is a naked lady lily. I'm not sure if it's the same one. So there is something that's grown in the area, but I would recommend they check and see what the scientific name is.
Yes.
And we're going to have to start wrapping up already. It's been really fun talking with you, Annie.
Yay, and thank you, Sherry.
This has been great. We've learned a lot, and people can learn more. We've been talking with Annie Spiegelman. She is a California Master Gardener, and she is the author of Talking Dirt, The Dirt Diva's Down-to-Earth Guide to Organic Gardening, published by Perigee and Penguin Group. And it's full of tips about growing roses organically, growing tomatoes, learning how to worship the worm. We didn't even get into that. So, Annie, thank you so much.
Good. Let's get out there and get dirty.
All righty. Thank you. Thanks to Jim Packard for producing this program. Thanks to Rachel Owens. And thanks to Dave Potrantz. And I'm Shelley Ryan, sitting in for Larry Mueller today for Garden Talk. And I host the Wisconsin Gardener on Wisconsin Public Television. And you have been listening to Garden Talk on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.